Good morning, New Mexico. Welcome to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're broadcasting from the Santa Fe Baking Company, streaming on the web at ksfr.org, podcasting at santafe.radiocafe.org, thanks to Dotfoil Computer Services, and we're at facebook.com/radiocafe. Later on in the program, Rob DeWalt is going to be with us, speaking of the arts. I'm very happy now to welcome to the program Leila Caramali. She is Chief Executive Officer of Shine Humanity. Dr. Jennifer Hartley is with us. She's a physician and volunteer with Shine Humanity, and Aisha Khan is from Relief for Pakistan. Now, Shine Humanity is an organization we'll hear about in just a moment. They have a booth at Folk Art Market this year. It's the humanitarian fundraising booth at the market. And let's turn to you, Leila. What is Shine Humanity all about?
Shine Humanity's mission is to help underprivileged communities deal with disaster. Primarily, we focus on medical and medical support issues, but also provide logistics and humanitarian assistance during the times of crisis. But we really want to stay with these communities from disaster to development and provide them a path out of the crisis that they find themselves in. So we have a model that we call our levels of care model that takes a community from its peak time of need through a rehabilitation process and onto a self-sustainable model where they are then financing and empowering themselves to look after their own needs. And again, I say that our focus has been primarily on medical and medical support services, but we have also ventured into areas like clean water projects, mental health projects, and volunteer development projects.
Where are you active?
We are right now active in three countries. We have an ongoing project in Japan. We've been there since March, focusing on shelter supplies, debris clearing, and now hopefully going into a long-term mental health rehabilitation program. We are also in Haiti, where we have a base relationship with a local grassroots nonprofit in Haiti, and act as a funnel to send medical volunteers from the United States and all across the world to support medical facilities in Haiti, where, you know, these facilities have, to some extent, come back into operations. They still lack skilled staff. So that's the plug that we're trying to fill in there. But I must say that Pakistan is where the center of our, the hub of our activity has been. And we've been in Pakistan since 2009. Personally, you know, I've lived and spent a large part of my the first half of my career in Pakistan as a journalist. And then
you are Pakistani.
I am Pakistani. I was in social work, in grad school for social work in 2005 when the earthquake struck. And that started this journey of Shine Humanity, because the original group of volunteers that went out from California out to respond to the crisis in Pakistan in 2005 are the same people who then banded together to start Shine Humanity several years later.
So let's talk about, I mean, Aisha was with us on this program right after the flood occurred, and it's about a year ago now.
Yes, it's actually, this is going to be the anniversary.
This
the
month.
End of July.
Yeah. Right. And we'll get an update from you, too. Mm-hmm. But what did you do, Leila? What did Shine Humanity do, and what did you see on the ground after the flood happened?
Shine Humanity's flood mission started on August 3rd of 2010. We responded initially in northern frontier province where the flooding actually began. We had a ground team in Pakistan, so it was very easy to mobilize. And our first line of action was to send out doctors, medical supplies, to areas that had been cut off. There were times when our crews were hiking 4 or 5 hours through deep water infested with snakes to try to get to communities that had been isolated. By the height of our flood response mission, which was 3 months into that, we were operating out of 8 different geographical areas. Our focus was on providing primary and preventive medical care, urgent care. In some cases, we started doing tertiary projects, tertiary secondary care projects, where we were facilitating hospitals to come back into operations and take care of the more critically ill patients. But quickly we shifted from mobile camps to center-based cares. So we started to rehabilitate the key government and nonprofit healthcare infrastructure that had been there before to try to bring them back online once the waters had receded. So we had also went into livelihood redevelopment projects where we were able to save a honey industry from devastation by providing them some cash support and technical support and assistance. We did a water pump and flour mill project in the same area in Frontier Province, where we were able to, by providing flour mills and water pumps, assist the farmers to drain the waterlogged lands that they had and save what was left of their crops. In the 1 year that has passed, we have remained very active with our current operations focused on four different geographical areas. So we have scaled down because the populations that were displaced and dislocated have by and large returned to their communities of origin. We have now taken our care infrastructure and brought it into their villages and their towns so that it's accessible. And we're now going very proactively into the rehabilitation, long-term rehabilitation phase, where we're focused on building back better, stronger, and then empowering these communities to look after their own healthcare needs with better education, better technical support, better management, and better funding.
Jennifer, you worked as a doctor in Pakistan. What did you see? What kind of illnesses were you treating, especially after the flood?
Well, I was last there in January. I was there in December and January. So this was after the acute phase of the flood. But I was in very close communication with the Shine Humanity staff on the ground during the acute phase. And during that phase, they were dealing with a lot of skin infections, waterborne illnesses of every kind, respiratory infections, diarrheal illnesses, which, as always, affect children most severely and pregnant women. By the time I got there, many of those acute illnesses had faded. But the point that I always make when I'm talking about Pakistan is that for many of these people, they're living on the edge of subsistence to begin with. And their health is very poor, and their nutrition is very poor. So when you have a disaster like this, it not only puts them back to square one, it puts them, you know, way behind the starting gate. What I saw when I was there in January, and it was incredibly cold. I'm not sure people realize how cold parts of Pakistan can get. It's a country of extremes. And many of the women, I saw a lot of women and children. I was in primarily in one of Shine's, the hospitals that Shine supports, on that visit. And many of these women had the clothes on their backs still at that point, months later, and nothing else to wear. You know, the kids unclothed in this bitter cold weather. I saw a large number of pregnant women, almost none of whom had any prenatal care at all. Children, again, with the winter respiratory illnesses, kids that here would be hospitalized in the ICU, you know, living at home still in tents, cardboard shelters. People at that time, you know, 6 months on, were still shoveling sand out of houses. I saw that. So still really not recovered at all from the aftermath of this disaster. And one thing that I have been able to see, I volunteered with Shine now since 2009. I've made four trips to Pakistan with them, and I've gotten a really good perspective on working in communities where they have been, and seeing the general level of health in those communities versus communities where they have not, you know, where they've just started projects. And it's really an extraordinary difference.
When you work with an organization like this, and in the, especially in the wake of exposés of organizations who turn out to have been doing things in a way that doesn't look very good or didn't have a lot of integrity, when you look at Shine Humanity, I mean, this is a group this is an organization that spends almost all of its income on actually caring for people and working with people, as opposed to having air-conditioned vans exactly. and all that kind mm-hmm. of thing.
And I should say that I have worked with organizations that have done that, so I know the difference. And Shine, what most impressed me when I first went to work with them was that I was sleeping on the floor with everybody else. There's no money spent on security. We just drive around and beat up old cars like everybody else in Pakistan. The money is... goes straight to buying medicine, straight to care. There, I have been there during, I know, and Layla can speak to this more precisely, but every year since the organization's inception, there has been an independent audit. I've been there while the auditors are combing through everything, so every penny is accounted for. And, you know, I can say that I've seen it. They live an incredibly austere life, the staff, and the level of dedication of this staff is just, I've never seen anything else like it in any other organization.
Aisha Khan, you're with Relief for Pakistan, and last year we talked about a lot of things that were happening, but
yes.
tell us about the work that this organization has done since we last saw you.
Yes, so I think when we last spoke, we were doing the fundraising drive for the seeds and the fertilizer. Because remember, the villagers had come back to us, we were going to make houses, and they said, no, we need to plant the crops first.
Can so I just say thank you for asking people what they need instead of just going and imposing it on them?
That's right. Well, at first we were like, the houses, but okay. So they wanted the seeds. So I have an update on that.
So you raised money and got donated massive amounts
yeah.
of seeds
Way
so they could replant their crops after the flood.
We thought we were going to be able to do 1,000 acres, but with the donations and a participatory kind of networking we did with FAO, the UN, and Imran Khan's foundation, who were fantastic to us, I think we planted 3,000 acres. And so the update on that, let's say about, what, 6-7 months later, is that they've had a bumper crop of wheat. Bumper. Because what happened with the flooding, apparently, is that there was a silting to the river, so the land turned more fertile. So then the next project, again, we were like, okay, because we are dedicating ourselves to these villages for the next couple of years.
And
right?
you made sure that the seeds went to the smallest farmers
To the
first.
Smallest farmers. We wanted them to be given to 10 acres and less. Because Pakistan, obviously, being a feudal society, they have very, very large land holdings. So we wanted to make sure that we get not to the big landlords who have, you know, were looking for seeds also at that time, but the smaller farmers who own their property. And that's one of the reasons we're working in this particular area and with this particular tribal chief, because he has started doing land reform in his area. And the reason these farmers are there, the 1 acre, 2 acre, 3 acre farms, is because he sold his lands to them at below market value.
Very interesting.
So that they could do, you know, they have an installment plan and everything, and they are landowners.
So the next project has to do with?
With the building of the dikes, which is what really got breached and the floods and what have you. So the original raise that we were doing for that was 150,000, but of course we, you know, kind of hit into donor fatigue at that point. So we shrunk the program to just fix the dikes for these particular landowner farmers. Okay, the small farmers again, 10 and less. And I got great news yesterday and great pictures because they started about in July, the program went effective. And we think that we're going to get all of the dikes in this particular area done before the end of the month, before the rains come.
And so even if there is flooding on the level of last year, there will be more protection.
There will be protection because the way Sardar Wali, our tribal chief that we're working with, his is the only dike that didn't fall in the floods last year. I don't know whether that's his MIT education.
you think?
But he apparently had reinforced the dike.
Can we just pause for a moment and talk about Pakistani tribal chiefs with an MIT education?
Exactly.
So in the vein of stereotype busting.
In the vein of, exactly. So he had, apparently, his dike did not fall. It completely... with the whole, you know, the floods did not affect it at all. So that's the way he's getting the rest of them repaired for these other smaller farmers. And it's just mind-blowing to me, and I was telling this to Leila earlier, because we want the community to feel like they're invested in what we're doing. Before we started the dike project, we went through Sardar Wali to the community and said, you need to put in some money towards this. Because we want to be able to show the world that you care enough. And we don't care if it's, you know, 10 rupees, 5 rupees, 200 rupees, whatever. we raised $5,800. That's when we realized what he's really done. By empowering them to be landowners, they were actually fairly prosperous before the floods came.
Now, $5,800 in that context is a very large amount of money.
It's a very large amount. We thought maybe we'd get $800. You know, because they'll give little stuff and whatever. But if it's all $5,800, we actually asked Sardar Ali whether, you know, is he putting the money in? He's like, no, this is what the community has come up with. So it's very interesting to me that they were that committed to it, gave us a great story to be able to tell donors. And we feel very, you know, fingers crossed right now that the project will be completed before the end of the month.
We're talking about Shine Humanity and the flooding in Pakistan and its aftermath. Now, Leila Karamali, is there anything like health insurance in Pakistan?
Well, Shine Humanity, through its ground partners, started a project as early as 2009. We initiated a health insurance program in a part of Kashmir that had been hit by a very devastating earthquake in 2005. So here we are, 4 years after the earthquake, and on that anniversary, we launched a health insurance scheme where each household contributes as little as 25 rupees. Now, to put it into Pakistani context, it's the price of a loaf of bread. To put it into U.S. context, that's about 30 cents a month. 25 rupees a month per person to buy into a primary care insurance scheme. And the goal of that program would be to raise the wellness of the community. So not only to make sure that they have round-the-clock urgent care, but also a very strong preventive care network, very strong health counseling and education, and follow-up and development tracking. That program is now in its second, close to its, it's finished its second year, and we have around 1,400 households enrolled in that scheme. So I think we've come a long way. I go back to something that my colleague, Todd Shea, Todd is an American who's lived in Pakistan since 2005, and he's the field operative arm of the work that we do. So here we are, the Pakistanis in America supporting the American in Pakistan. It's a really interesting...
There's a movie in this.
Yeah, there is. I've asked Todd, how has he been able to work this little miracle in Kashmir? And I actually went to visit this community in January of this year and strolled amongst the subscribers of the healthcare program and the hospital and just wandered around on my own and started talking to people. And they said, you know, what really amazes us is your commitment to quality care and the fact that nothing changes whether or not management and top brass are around or not. And the place was spotless. The paperwork was up to date. The record keeping, the staff, cooperation. It was unseen for me. I mean, I've lived a career and a half in Pakistan and I've never seen anything like that. So I asked Todd, what exactly have you done here? How did you find these people? How did you build this place? Because I know my country and I know what its flaws are, but here is something that's really working. And his response to that was very interesting. He said, if you provide the right conditions, if you provide a system in which there is zero tolerance for corruption, in which management holds itself to a very high standard and acts as a role model and a mentor to the ground level staff members and the community and lives amongst that community, not secluded behind walls and barbed wire, but lives amongst them and lives the life that they live, understands their problem, and then builds a solution to address those needs, and then remains active in the unfolding and the unrolling of this project, fixing things that are not working, improving things as they go along. It's when you build a system like that, people will come, and people will respond, and people will engage. And I think that's what we've been able to do. So our goal, hopefully, is to take this model of care that we've been able to establish in Kashmir and step by step unroll it to other disaster-affected communities who've been hit by the flood.
And if people want to support all of these efforts with Shine Humanity, they can do a very simple thing, which is go to Folk Art Market and go to Booth 111, which is on the upper level. It's right near the entrance to the Museum of International Folk Art. Jennifer Hartley, tell us about the booth itself. I haven't been up there yet. I hear there's some very lovely stuff.
There certainly is. And this booth has been a completely locally generated project. A group of local women just felt in the fall that the Pakistan disaster was getting no coverage in the national, international media. And this booth is the result of a lot of hard work on the part of those women. We have some gorgeous, gorgeous things, many of which I personally shopped for in the bazaars when I was there. Yes, in January. So this is probably as close as you can get to ferreting around in the bazaars of Rawalpindi. We have an enormous selection, everything from $2 items, fun keychains, things like that, to gorgeous one-of-a-kind children's dresses made out of vintage fabrics with vintage beadwork, carved serving spoons from the mountains of Hunza out of apricot and mulberry wood. Some really extraordinary items, very well priced. We received a huge donation actually from the Pakistani embassy to this project, which was an enormous help. So I'm really hoping this is...
Scarves, jewelry.
Scarves of every variety one can possibly imagine, priced incredibly well. We have really fun jewelry, lapis and silver and Bollywood-style bling.
Jenny, I heard that you are giving away free bangles with every purchase.
We are, yes, thank you. We're giving away the fun glass bangles that everybody wears in Pakistan.
Oh, nice.
Every color of the rainbow. So it's a lot of fun, and... this is really the closest, 100% of the profits from the booth will go directly to Shine Humanity and directly into their healthcare project. So this is pretty much as close as you can get to putting your money directly into the hands of a person who desperately needs healthcare in Pakistan.
Leila Karamali is Chief Executive Officer of Shine Humanity. Dr. Jennifer Hartley is a physician and volunteer with Shine Humanity. And Aisha Khan is from Relief for Pakistan. Thank you so much for being with us. And we'll see you at Folk Art Market, Booth 111, as well as the whole rest of that.
Thank you for having us on the
Thanks
show.
Thanks so
Thank
much.
Thank you, Mary Charlotte.
And also, just wanted to let people know that there is going to be a giveaway of some tickets to Folk Art Market during the next segment, so please stay tuned. We're going to take a little break right now. We'll be right back. I'd like now to welcome Rob DeWalt. He is with the Pasatiempo Friday Arts Magazine in the Santa Fe, New Mexico. He's with us just about every Friday. Speaking of the arts, welcome.
Good morning.
Good morning. And Bernard Rubenstein has joined us, and he will tell us about the Cuba Caravan. Welcome. What's happening?
Good morning, Charlotte. I'm Mary Charlotte. This coming Monday, the 11th, Santa Fe is going to welcome again the Pastors for Peace Cuba Caravan. And the purpose of the caravan is to work against the economic blockade that the United States has against Cuba, to supply equipment to the Cuban people, to supply construction materials, medicines, things that are blockaded by our country against the people of Cuba. We're going to have a welcome ceremony at the plaza at 2 o'clock, right after the Santa Fe bandstand. We'll have some Cuban music with the Cuban band Sabor. And we'll be able to meet the Cuban caravanistas who will make some comments, and you'll see the big yellow painted Caravan for Peace bus. The buses come from over 130 cities all over the United States and Canada. They travel routes through the United States and Canada, going to the Mexican border, cross over Mexican customs, and are loaded onto freighters in Tampico, and they're transported to Cuba.
Now, do they ever get there? There's always big problems.
Sometimes there are problems on the Mexican border, but for the last several years, they have made it. Sometimes United States Customs really hassles them on the border and makes them unload everything on the buses, all the computers, goes through everything. But we're hopeful that the people are very patient. They're fighting against this kind of harassment, and it usually goes through. And this year, we're looking especially for construction equipment, because the hurricanes wreak terrible destruction in Cuba, and they have a terrible time getting construction supplies. So anyone who might like to contribute tools, electrical supplies, plumbing equipment, we're collecting these at Westminster Presbyterian Church. And we'll have an evening reception at 7 o'clock and be collecting supplies at the church all afternoon.
Which afternoon is that?
This is Monday the 11th, this coming Monday.
Oh, 7 in the morning.
No, 7 o'clock in the evening is the reception.
Oh, okay.
And we'll be collecting all the materials after 3 o'clock, after our welcome ceremony at the plaza.
Got it.
So 2 o'clock, a ceremony at the plaza, and then after our ceremony, people can come by Westminster Church with construction supplies, carpentry things, things in good order, screws, bolts, hammers.
You know, I was in Havana once, and I got talking to a guy who is a construction guy, and he said, when you come back to Cuba next time, could you bring me a masonry bit?
Yes, of course. They can use anything. So anyone listening to the program, if you have, you know, nails, hammers, shovels, plumbing supplies, things that are in working condition, you know, but sometimes people have duplicates. I was thinking I have in my basement several hammers, and so I'm going to contribute as much as I can. So
yeah, because you can't use more than one at one time that I know of.
Absolutely. So 2 o'clock at the plaza. We'd love to have everyone welcome the caravanistas. There'll be some wonderful Cuban music, and then that afternoon we'll be collecting things at Westminster Church, and then there'll be a reception for the caravanistas at 7 o'clock that night.
And then they leave the next day.
They're going to Taos, and then they're going through Texas, and all the buses, all the 20, 30, 40 buses will be meeting at the Mexican border.
Oh, so these buses are all over the country.
They're coming from over 130 cities, all over Canada and the United States. So it's a massive effort. If you go to the website of the Pastors for Peace, you can see the different routes. You go to IFCO. This is the Interreligious Foundation for Community Organization.
IFCO,
and this is the 22nd year that the caravan has gone to Cuba.
Well, Bernard Rubenstein is a conductor. He's the head of the the Santa Fe Holguin Sister Cities program, and we will see you Monday afternoon on the plaza.
At 2 o'clock on the plaza and 7 o'clock at Westminster Church, and hopefully if you have some extra construction equipment, please bring it to the church that afternoon.
Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you, Mary Charlotte, for having me.
Rob DeWalt.
Hi.
Hi.
How are you?
Oh, waking up.
Yeah, me too.
How about you?
Well, it was an early morning, but I'm here.
Still is,
somewhat. But the coffee's helping, so that's good.
Indeed. So Folk Art Market is happening this weekend. We're going to give away a pair of tickets for the Sunday Folk Art Market in just a moment. In fact, why don't we do that now?
Okay.
Should we do that now? Folk Art Market. Folk Art Market is a grand festival on Museum Hill. And for the third and fourth caller to 428-1382, we have a pair of tickets for Sunday Folk Art Market, and also you will get a bag that has the West African High Life Band CD. They played last night on the rail yard, and a water bottle, a nice catalog from Museum of International Folk Art. Good stuff, and it will be waiting for you at the booth, the entrance booth at Folk Art Market. So we'll take the third and fourth callers, but only call if you really are definitely going to go.
Sweet. Yeah, I missed the West African High Life Band on the rail yard yesterday. I really wanted to go.
Yeah, I didn't go either, but I heard they were wonderful.
But they're playing again on Saturday, I believe.
Excellent.
At the market from 12:30 to 1:40 p.m. There's actually all kinds of great music. Our friend just mentioned Savor. They're playing up at the market on Saturday at 3:15. And let's see. Ooh, there's the Monks are performing. Remember
the Monks?
The Monks.
Which Monks?
I'm not going to pronounce this right, so I'm going to make you say it.
Ah, the Monks of the Drepung Loseling Monastery.
Yeah.
Those Monks, they've performed on this show.
Yes.
That very deep, I guess, what would you call it, throat singing?
Yeah.
Of the Tibetan Buddhist monks.
Yeah.
Cool.
They're going to be, they're having a morning performance on Saturday. The market on Saturday is from 7 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. It's a long one. The entertainment begins at 7 a.m., but I believe that the regular market starts a little later because there's an early bird thing happening on Saturday. Anywho, but this is kind of an art-filled weekend. Well, it's always an art-filled weekend in Santa Fe, but
That's
this weekend especially. We've got Art Santa Fe.
Yes.
All kinds of crazy business with Art Santa Fe and the Paso Tiempo today.
When I have gone to Art Santa Fe in the past, it has been absolutely wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
Incredible. incredible art from everywhere. I remember I went to folk art, and then I went down to Art Santa Fe, and I was thinking, which is the real, in some sense, folk art? And it's not that the Art Santa Fe is quote-unquote folk art, but there was such an incredibly creative use of materials and ideas and forms in that in that show.
Yeah, there's a lot of dialogue that happens, too, among artists and gallerists. And there's some interesting things going on there. Demonstrate Korean paper making demonstrations. And I believe that there's that is actually at the Santa Fe Community Convention Center. And you can get a one-day ticket, or you can get a three-day pass for Art Santa Fe. You can go to ticketssantafe.org, and you can find out more information in the great Pasatiempo today, or you can go to artsantafe.com, or you can call 988-8883 for details.
And the tickets for folk art are gone, so please don't call anymore. We're going to have another ticket giveaway in a moment.
For folk art?
No, for Aspen Santa Fe Ballet.
Ah.
Let's talk about that.
Let's talk about that. I have some information on that, I believe, right in front of my face here. Let's see. There's going to be work by three choreographers that are familiar to local audiences. Let's see, Friday, Saturday, at the Lenzing.
Friday and Saturday at the Lenzing.
Yeah. Let's see. Overglow is a newly commissioned ballet by Jorma Aello. And the dance includes music from Mendelssohn's Italian Symphony and a central adagio section set to Beethoven's Violin Concerto in D Major.
Wow.
And then there's Kiss Me Goodnight, which is a new acquisition. All kinds of great choreographers on display here. And, of course, the dancers, which is why everybody goes, right?
One goes for both. I mean, Aspen Santa Fe Ballet, they've got it all. They've got great dancers. They get these choreographers from all over the place. And the ones that they have tonight and tomorrow night are some of their regulars.
Right.
We've seen them before. And the costumes and the sets and the lighting and the way it all comes together, it's spectacular. I
know.
Love them.
Most people, when they think of Aspen Santa Fe Ballet, they think of the Nutcracker and nothing else. But
really?
Well, I mean, you know, not like ballet fanatics, but you know, it's just a lot of people just think of, oh, Aspen Santa Fe, they do the Nutcracker. Go and see these mixed repertory performances. Both performances start at 8 p.m. That's tonight and Saturday at the Lenzing. You know where to get tickets at ticketsantafe.org.
And if you want to get one pair of tickets for Saturday night, we are doing a giveaway right now for the fourth caller. 1-2-3-4-4-2-8-1-3-8-2, and that will be our last ticket giveaway of the day.
That was a lot of numbers you just said there. 1-2-3-4-4-3-8. let's see. Oh, this is great. Le Chat Lunatique. You ever heard Le Chat Lunatique?
No.
Do their sort of jazz fusion, gypsy jazz, reggae, klezmer, western swing. They are going to be at the Santa Fe Performance Exchange at 7:30 tonight, and that's out there in El Dorado on Caliente Road. This is a great band. I mean, these guys, they really put on a show. The music is really diverse. And Santa Fe Performance Exchange, if you haven't been out there yet, it's an incredible performance space. And it was once Mike's Music Exchange and whatnot,
right.
But it's happening out there. And on that note, if I can just do a little PSA here for a second.
Please do.
The Summer Rock Camp Scholarship Fund for Candyman Strings and Things, it needs help. Their funds have been depleted because they don't profit from any of the programs. And if you go to candymanstringsandthings.com, you can find out information about the summer rock camps. They have kids classes age 8 to 18 and adult classes age 19 and up. But you can also donate to help them keep these classes going. These classes are amazing. And as a matter of fact, the summer rock camp that they do for kids, the kids get to form a band, they get to name their band, they get to rehearse with their band, they get to record a CD at Step Ridge Studios, and they get to perform at Santa Fe Performance Exchange. And so that's a lot of great stuff for young musicians in this town.
Indeed.
And so go to candymanstringsandthings.com and help them out, for sure. What else is happening?
What else is happening?
Oh, the Santa Fe Opera's apprentice singers are going to congregate at the town's most convivial piano bar, Vanessi, for casual performances. There's going to be musical theater, opera, operetta, cabaret. That's at 6:30 p.m. and 8:30 p.m. on Tuesday, July 12th, Thursday, July 14th, and Saturday, July 16th, and 6:30 p.m. on Sunday, July 17th. And Sunday, July 17th performance is sort of a sing-along. It's kind of an interesting thing. There is a cover, but if you call 982-9966, you can arrange for sort of reservations for those performances.
And don't forget that David Geist plays with his Geist Cabaret at Pronto upstairs, and they do that, well, tonight, tomorrow, and Sunday. And always good fun. The summer performance hours are 6:15 to 9:15 for reservations, 984-2645.
You know, I have a friend who's in town doing some Santa Fe photographic workshops, and he's a photographer that used to live here in town and worked with my partner at a local restaurant. And he went down to the Santa Fe bandstand, and he was really impressed. You know, I mean, he lives in New York. He sees live performance all the time, but he really loved the vibe. And
lots of good stuff on Santa Fe Bandstand.
Yeah, lots of great stuff. On Monday, there's the Country Blues Review at noon, and there's also, let's see, John O'Manson and Hillary Smith in Soul Kitchen at 6 p.m. And then on Tuesday, there's Rhythm in 53rd and Curly Taylor and Zydeco Trouble at 6 p.m. That's Tuesday. And then, of course, Wednesday is Roberto Capocchi, who is playing at, I believe, 6 p.m.
No, I think it's at noon.
Oh, you know, you're right. It is at noon. And then there is Mezcla Latina, followed by Paul Pino and the Tone Daddies at 6 p.m. on the Plaza.
Good
so
stuff.
So all kinds of free live music.
Free music on the Plaza.
I know.
What could be better?
I mean, it doesn't even matter if there's monsoon. I want to mention Thursday, there's Eliza Gilkison and Jamie Michaels at 6 p.m. on the Plaza.
Excellent.
So go check out the Santa Fe Bandstand. It looks like the weather is going to cooperate this week.
Yeah, who knows?
But we'll see.
You never know from one moment to the other.
I hope it cooperates for the shuttle launch. If nobody knows, the very last space shuttle is supposed to be launched today.
Yeah, I heard the news about it.
I think at like 9 o'clock. So I'm going to geek out on that if it works.
You're going to geek out?
I'm going to totally geek out.
What is your geeking out watching the space shuttle look like?
It's kind of hard to explain. I usually do it alone. You know, I was going to Santa Fe Prep when the Challenger tragedy occurred,
yeah.
And we were all watching it live on television, as were a lot of students all across. And ever since then, I have not missed watching a launch. Not because I want to see that ever happen again,
but
just because it's just been a tradition. What else is going on?
Well, on Monday, July 11th at Collected Works Bookstore, the Shared Reading Series continues with Glennis Carl and Bethany Mackin Baxter. Glennis Carl's story and personal journey, Hold My Hand, starts with a call in the middle of the night that changed her life forever. Her son had suffered a traumatic head injury and goes on from there. Bethany Mackin Baxter's Two Sons is a fictional story of Harry Wyman. Since the murder of his only child, Stephen, 2 years ago, wealthy Jewish widower Wyman has been consumed with anger at the African-American boy who pulled the trigger and the gang members who were with him. But when he accidentally meets James Gray, the shooter, the lonely man's world is turned upside down. So that's at Collected Works Bookstore on Monday. And gee whiz, they didn't tell me what time, but most of their events are at 6 in the evening. I'll double check that right now.
Okay. While you're double checking that, I have to remind folks that the July 10th was originally scheduled to be the last day of the due return, and it's been extended through August 21st.
Yeah.
And on the boat at the due return at the Munoz Waxman Gallery at the Center for Contemporary Arts on Old Pecos Trail, D Numbers and Then Eats Them are performing at 6 o'clock. And these performances are pretty wild. I mean, it's a great time, and it's one of the best, I think, atmospheres for any kind of live music that I've seen in Santa Fe.
Even though it's sort of temporal.
Well, I mean, not wild because you're surrounded by all of this visual information, and then you get some of the best music out there. D Numbers, one of the best bands in town. Based here anyway.
By the way, that Collected Works event is indeed at 6 in the evening.
Oh, good.
Yes.
Okay. So go check out the Due Return. It's open through the 21st, but there's a great concert there on July 10th. Lots of other openings tonight. I think in lieu of Art Santa Fe, everyone is bringing out the big guns. So we've got Canyon Road Contemporary Art, paintings by Javier Lopez Barbosa, and there's a reception tonight at 5 o'clock. We've got, I believe this is wonderful. Have you been to Plush Gallery yet?
No.
Got to go to Plush Gallery.
All right.
It's kind of a pop-up gallery situation, and they have a show called Calm Manufacture, mixed media work by C.J. Davis, and sculpture by Joel Kaiser, and paintings by Peter Ligon, and watercolors by the Scuba Collective. And there's a reception tonight from 5 to 8 p.m., and that's through July 29th. And then we have to welcome Red Dot Gallery to an actual building. Red Dot Gallery is having a grand opening reception tonight from 4:30 to 7:30 p.m., and they are located at 826 Canyon Road. It's work by Santa Fe Community College students. I have a few friends that have work in the show, but that's not the reason why I'm mentioning it. It's just, it's nice that, that Red Dot Gallery has a home and that they're serving the community by showing artwork by students in Santa Fe.
Excellent.
I was just at the Santa Fe Community College the other day, and they have a great student art exhibit in the main building.
They always have a great student art exhibit.
The sculpture is amazing.
They've got some of the best... I don't know whether to say it's the teachers or the students or that beautiful combination of the two, but they must have some great teachers there because they always have the most creative stuff in the hallways.
Oh, yes. Yeah, they have a lot of great artwork there. I went in and sat in on a class on art criticism, and it was very interesting. I think it's the second time I've done it, and I think if I wasn't doing what I'm doing now, I'd want to do something like that.
You'd want to do art criticism?
No, teach.
Ah.
But we'll see.
I thought you did art criticism.
I do.
Okay. Earthworks Institute series, Stories of the Land, Wildlife Tracking Workshop in the Village of Galisteo with Peter Callen and Mitch Johnson of Pathways and Wildlife Corridors of New Mexico and Catherine Eagleston of the Wildlife Center is happening tomorrow. You arrive by 8:45 a.m. The event runs from 9 until 1. There's an optional lunch in the shade of the Bosque of Galisteo, and Earthworks Institute is offering all of this. Don't bring your animals, but otherwise you can check out earthworksinstitute.org, and for more information 982-9806. Yeah, I guess if you're doing wildlife tracking, you probably shouldn't bring your pets.
Right, probably not.
Probably not.
Yeah,
but anyway, Earthworks Institute does amazing work, and. They're doing another thing on Monday, the 11th of July, called Harvesting Water from the Sky. It's a water harvesting workshop in El Dorado with Reese Baker and Jan Willem Janssens and members of the Semi-Arid Cafe offered by the El Dorado Community Improvement Association. Once again, it's from 6:30 to 9 in the evening. Once again, 982-9806.
Sweet. Oh, Teatro Paraguas, so the Teen Ensemble, they have these four original one-act plays that they're presenting at their studio over there on Richards Lane. And let's see, there's performance on tonight at 8 o'clock, and there's performance on Saturday at 8 o'clock. And I believe there's a performance on, let me just check, I believe there's a performance on Sunday. Yes, there is. There is a performance at 2 o'clock. On Sunday, and those continue through next weekend, so you have a couple of weekends to check them out. But
excellent.
The Teen Ensemble always does good work, and there's all kinds. Ooh, I think there's something I should probably mention, otherwise I'm never going to hear the end of it.
Well, while you look for it,
okay.
I will tell you that Victoria Scott of the Black Art Studio will be giving a slide talk on Nigerian indigo and Oshogbo art at the Travel Bug at 5 o'clock. Tomorrow, Saturday the 9th of July. The Travel Bug is at 839 Paseo de Peralta, and that should be good. She's certainly an expert on African textiles.
Cool. That thing I was going to mention?
Yes.
I forgot what it was. So I'll mention something else instead. Okay.
Well, you were never going to hear the end of it if you forgot, and now you forgot.
It's what I thought was I was supposed to mention is not in here, so and I don't have the information in front of me, and I want to make sure I get the information right, so I'm just not going to mention it. But I will mention the fact that, let's see. Oh, James McMurtry and the Heartless Bastards are playing at the Rail Yard on Saturday. And there's a great story in the Pasatiempo today about it. And, of course, that's going to be a great gig. It's in the Rail Yard Plaza. It's outside, and I'm not sure if they're going to have a tent over it or what.
The Heartless Bastards.
Yes.
I know them. Some of them.
I know a lot of them. But there's other great things happening in the rail yard, too, music-wise. This is great. I think it was in 2008, there used to be this thing called the Silver 502 Lounge. And what they did is they took the double-decker train car and a couple of the flatbed cars, and they turned it into a club. They had DJs, and they had a little cocktail bar set up. And, you know, and it kind of went away, but it's back. And now it's called the Bar Car, which is, you know, I guess it's an okay name. every Thursday, Friday, and Saturday night through the summer, starting at 9 p.m., they're going to have different acts there. On Friday night, tonight, they have DJ Pablo 77. And then on Saturday night, they have DJs Reverend Mitten and Javier. And then on Thursday, June 14th, they have DJs Federici and Bacon, who are also in D Numbers. So there's a small cover, and I believe you're going to have to be 21 and over for this one. But if you need more information, email CAT, that's K-A-T, at SFSR, that's Santa Fe Southern Railway, .com. And also in the railroad, one more thing. Saturday, July 29th at Warehouse 21 from 5 to 11 p.m., the unfortunate closing of Corazone, and that's still kind of in limbo, has left a lot of metalheads without a regular place to go. There's always great metal at Warehouse 21, and they're having a big metal showcase on Saturday night over there. Fields of Elysium, Soul to Rest, Grink Eye, Necronaut, Flying Donkey Punch is going to be performing also, and it's a really inexpensive show. I'll just put it that way. Warehouse 21 could use your support. Of course, it's no alcohol, no drugs, no violence, you know, mosh with love, that sort of thing. So there's something in the rail yard for everybody to do this weekend.
Excellent.
Music-wise.
Yeah. There's something for everybody to do all over town.
Yeah.
Well, it's almost time to go.
Really?
What are you doing this weekend?
I am going to International Folk Art Market.
Yay.
I am going to Art Santa Fe. And I am sleeping.
All of those things sound
that's
good.
That's pretty much. Oh, and I'm going to watch that Page One, the documentary about the New York Times that's starting
good.
Next week.
Excellent.
And I'm not sure what's happening
in the realm of movies.
We've got a couple of things happening. We've got, Circo, the documentary about the circus, the Mexican circus family, is opening at the Screen. And Jonathan Richards gave it a favorable review on page 70 of the Paso Tiempo. I watched it. I had a different opinion, but hey.
Also at the Screen, Queen to Play has become highly recommended. Everyone
yes.
says it's fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Buck continues at the CCA.
Yes.
And you've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're streaming live on the web at KSFR.org, podcasting at SantaFeRadioCafe.org. Thanks to Dot Foil Computer Services. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes. You can find us at Facebook.com/Radio Cafe. My email address is RadioCafe@KSFR.org. Rob DeWalt is with us every week, and it's always wonderful to have you with us.
It's always wonderful to be here.
And
I'm more tired. I'm a little less awake than usual.
Yeah, you had to get up very, very early.
Yes.
But stay tuned for the BBC, then local news, then jazz. Congratulations to our ticket winners today.
Yay.
Keep your ears tuned to KSFR, Santa Fe's only public radio station. And the news is next. Jazz a la carta. Hasta mañana. No, hasta lunes.
Hasta lunes.
And we'll see you later.
Bye.
Ciao.